Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. This week, following week 15 of the National Lacrosse League season, I have a couple of great guests. I welcome David Brock, defender for the New England Black Wolves. We talk about the outstanding season he's having at 32, possibly his best of his career. We also, of course, touch on the elephant in the room, the Callum Crawford suspension situation, and Brock's feelings about that, both as a teammate and as a PLPA rep for the Black Wolves. And it is pretty interesting, his nuanced view on the subject. And we talk about all things Black Wolves heading into the final stretch of the season. And then, special treat, I'm joined by Ted Cordingly, the equipment manager for the Buffalo Bandits, who gives us a sneak peek behind the scenes at preparing for a game, preparing his players to be ready to go in any circumstances, all the odd little quirks and things that go into having players' equipment ready, how many sticks they go through, how many balls they go through, how many hours he and his staff spend at the arena on a home game day. It's a lot. Sneak peek, quick preview. It is a lot of time that they spend. So, David Brock and Ted Cordingly this week on Box the Beat on NLL Radio. Black Wolves, thanks for coming on the show. Because you're having quite a season, would you consider yourself a transition player or defender, first off?
Defender. Okay. I'm a defender.
A defender who will run up the floor when the opportunity is there.
Yeah, we've all been given the green light in New England to get the ball up the floor. So defense first, of course, and transition second. And it's nice to chip in from time to time.
Nice. Now, I've got you on the show. You're also the PLPA rep for the Black Wolves. And I do want to address, we're not going to sit here and dance around the elephant in the room, because obviously in New England right now, Callum Crawford is a big story. His suspension of 5 games as a repeat offender for 2 match penalties was reduced to 1 game. And it's been all the buzz on social media. We're going to talk about it for a couple minutes here. And for you, it's an interesting situation because obviously he's your teammate. And you always want to back your teammate, but you're also a PLPA rep. And I've heard people saying, hey, what about Brad Cree? Doesn't he deserve representation from PLPA? And my take on it, and I've talked to some other people, I've heard a lot of people really piling on Callum Crawford. And I feel like he did it. It was to me, a clear match penalty. But I think the rule was the 5 games for a second offense within 2 years is a very harsh rule. And I think it's something that needed to be discussed. And the thing about it is, Callum didn't, he made the play, and he was willing, my understanding is he's willing to accept the consequences, but he went through the appeal process that all players are afforded, and he won his appeal. And in that sense, he didn't really do anything wrong, to my mind.
Right. Well, first of all, it's a tough subject. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moving parts, and you know, being, you know, a teammate of Callum and a PLPA rep and a veteran in the league, it's, you know, I don't really know how to feel about everything, to be completely honest with you. Firstly, yeah. I hope Brad Cree is okay. And Callum can attest this, you never want to see anyone get hurt. So I hope Brad is doing well. As for Callum, it's I don't want to say it's black and white because it's a fairly complicated situation, but ultimately the ruling is pretty black and white. You know, he was assessed his 5+1 suspension. Mm-hmm. He was willing to, you know, he's upset about it, but he understood. I had conversations with him. He understood, you know, he was a repeat offender, and he you know, the rules state you can't, you know, do what he did. And he was prepared to, pay the consequence, you know, pay the price, and he ultimately it was overturned, and Callum had nothing to really do with that. And I, to be honest with you, I feel quite bad for Callum because has taken a lot of judgment and a lot of heat on social media. And I think he's, you know, I do feel bad for him in that sense. But again, it's a tough situation because you don't want to see anyone get hurt. And their game is trying to eliminate headshots, obviously. And that, you know, it's pretty obvious that that was a headshot. So it mm-hmm. you know, I don't think it was malicious. I know he didn't mean to do it. It was just, you know, it moves pretty quick out there. I feel bad for Callum. And again, I hope Brad Cree's okay. And mm-hmm. Something that needs to be addressed, you know, that match penalty rule, because when you think about it, 6 games is a third of our season, and that's pretty yeah. significant amount of time to miss.
It is. I'll tell you, I honestly thought, looking at it and watching it and looking at the rule, the 5 games for 2 match penalties within 2 years, I thought that seems like such a long time. And for Callum, I mean, he did. There were definitely 2 match penalties within a 13-month span or so. But it's over the course of 14 years. Those are his 2 real suspendable offenses. And when I look at it, it does seem excessive when it is a third of the season. And I thought, honestly, the appropriate length would be the 1 game for the match and 2 games, I thought, as a repeat offender. And if there's a third incident, then, you know, you add on because it becomes clear there's a pattern. But I thought 5 games, and then if there's a third one, the way the rule stands right now, it's 10 games, which, you know, with the game, that's 11 games for it. That's over half a season. That's a huge, huge and very severe penalty.
Yeah, absolutely. It, you know, it's a lot of time lost. And like you said, Cal's been in the league 14 years, and this is, you know, sure, he has had 2 incidents so close together that it, mm-hmm. that it is a little bit of a, you know, a red flag. However, I know, like I said, Callum's, you know, a pretty honest player, pretty clean player, never meant to injure anyone. And I think everyone knows that, but it's definitely something that's going to need to be reevaluated going forward.
I'm ready to move on. It's like I said, I wanted to address that. If there's anything else you'd like to add about it, I'm keen. It may have been a little uncomfortable for you being a PLPA rep and hearing guys saying, hey, we've got to protect Brad Cree and the other players, as well as the player who has perpetrated a foul. And that can kind of catch you in the middle sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was Reid Reinholdt who is a Toronto's PLPA rep, and he tweeted it. He said it best. The rules, you know, the system is fundamentally flawed. It's just unfortunate that it's, you know, I understand why some people might be upset that, you know, Brad is a player as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he pays his dues and has the union represent him. Mm-hmm. And same thing happened with Jamie Rooney a few years back when Billy O'Brien knocked his teeth out. It's, I think that's something that we're going to have to look at going forward as a player's union, because you got to make sure that everybody's protected. You never know, you know, knock on wood, God forbid, it might happen to Callum next week. And, you know, I don't think that'll happen, but if it does, it's like Reid said it best, it's fundamentally flawed. It's something that's going to need to be reexamined. And, you know, I'm glad it's over. Well, not over and done with, but I'm glad that Callum's going to be back. He's a massive part of our team. He's arguably the best player in the league. He's a phenomenal leader. He's a phenomenal teammate, and he's a great guy. So I'm really happy that he's back with us this weekend.
Yeah, 81 points for Callum Crawford through 11 games, including 34 goals. He's just having an astonishing season. And like you said, really providing a lot of leadership on the floor. I want to focus some here, though, on your season, because I think that, you know, watching you, I think you've had a solid career in the National Lacrosse League. But here you are at the age of 32, and I think arguably having your best season in the NLL. Do you feel like that's the way you're playing, or do you just see it as kind of a continuation of what you've done through your career?
I think, you know what, Steve, I think that it's just you know, the old cliche, you know, you hear guys say it all the time, you know, it's the guys around me, it's my teammates, it's my coaches, and it's really true. We have a pretty solid veteran group of defenders, adding Andrew Suter and Craig Downing have really helped our defense, and I think that adding a couple more veterans who have been around and who have seen, you know, who have been playing a long time. It's kind of brought our defense to, maybe not as of late, but I definitely feel more comfortable on the floor with those guys around, which allows me personally to take more chances. In terms of it being my best year, I don't know. Maybe the numbers might say so, but we're 7-6. Having a good year with scored some goals, created some turnovers, but it's tough, right? It's, you know, I don't put much stock in those stats. What matters to me is that goals against average, the goals against and wins and losses mm-hmm. ultimately.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers certainly do suggest you're right up there in terms of points, and you've already set your career high for cause turnovers. And I think that a lot of what you said definitely rings true with, I think the addition of Greg Downing isn't surprising how much he's brought to the table for people who have been watching the game closely, because he has been an outstanding defender for a number of years. I think the other guy you mentioned, Andrew Suter, I've found it quite surprising because he's been a very good player over the years, such a dynamic player and personality and leader. But if you've watched him, any of us who have watched him the last few years since he's had the multiple knee injuries, he definitely wasn't moving the way that he used to. He didn't have the same acrobatic nature. He wasn't as athletic as he was, which is such a big part of the game. And I actually got to watch him play in the Lasny tournament down in Onondaga before the season, back in September. And there was one play where he took off up the floor and he took a hit and he kind of spun and fell and rolled as he hit the floor and just rolled over, planted his foot, popped up, kept running, went to the net, spun around a guy and got a shot off. I don't think he scored, but to me, watching that play, I thought, oh my goodness, he might be back. Like, this might be here. And he has been, I think, head and shoulders above what he has been the last couple of years because he's healthy again.
I agree with you. I think that Suits is, I've never really played with him. I've played against him for a while, and I always knew, you know, he was a solid defender and a tremendous leader. But actually playing with him this year, like I said, it's helped my confidence. I think it's helped everyone on our defense and our offense's confidence having a guy like that on the team. And he's playing outstanding. I think he's committed himself to being in shape. I think he's taken pretty good care of himself. Again, I don't know what he's been like in the past, but this is from what I see this year. He's a darn good player and a darn good leader. So welcome to addition. And I think he's only what, 29 or 30 years old. So he's got a long career ahead of him. And definitely somebody I prefer to have on my side than on a
And he is, he'll be turning 30 in a month. So he's got a while. And the nice thing about it is watching him struggle with the knees and having it kind of keep going and still looking like it was like just looking like they were not quite working the way they had. It didn't necessarily look like his career was going to be a long one. Some guys just get taken down by it. But he is one guy that everybody except, you know, he can be very grating to play against. Obviously, he is passionate, but he is one of the best guys you can have on your team. Hanging around him, around a number of teams, you hear nothing but positive things about him because he is such a generous person to be around. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
He sure is. Again, I didn't know him well until this year. Obviously, we had our scrap a few years back. After the fight, he was the first guy that reached out and to see how I was doing. And he's a fan favorite, a favorite in the locker room, and nothing but good things to say about Suitsy. And we all know how tough he is. Take more than a couple knee surgeries to keep that guy down. He'll do anything he can to keep going.
I think the other interesting thing about the Black Wolves this year is, on the defensive side for sure, is that you've got a bunch of guys who came in and clearly were quite good players, quite promising players, but it takes a while to learn to play defense at the National Lacrosse League level. And you have a bunch of guys in their like second, third year who to me look like they're just getting that sort of veteran sense and calmness about them, so they're able to do more. I think of a guy like Colton Watkinson, who I thought was a terrific rookie, but you can just see him just blossoming, I think, this year. Adam Bomberry, who has been around for a while, but has been kind of overlooked and is really one of the better defenders in the league. And guys like Nick Jankowski, Ryan Fournier, who came in, I think has played by far his best lacrosse for you. And Joel Coyle, another guy. So it's a bunch of young guys who are all kind of maturing together. And there's still some ups and downs, but it seems like consistency is coming, and that's the biggest thing that's turning around for you.
The biggest thing, consistency, and that's one thing that our coaching staff and our leadership group preaches. We have to be consistent. Champions are consistent, and we want to be, you know, we got a long way to go, but we want to be a champion. And with the first step to becoming a champion is consistency. And those four or five names you mentioned, those guys are core guys, and playing, you know, they're buying into their roles, and they're leading by example. And not enough, we don't have enough time on the show for me to go on about those guys you mentioned.
And I mean, obviously you've got some, you mentioned the coaching group, and that's gone through some change too, of course, with Darryl Gibson coming in on the offensive end after Tracy Kolesky left, and Jim Veltman was going to return after a season away and decided he just wasn't in the space to feel he could contribute or give everything he wanted to give if he was going to be there. So Clem D'Orazio is back in, but Clem unfortunately has had some personal life issues that have kind of stepped into the way for him. So you've had a fair bit of turnover among the coaching staff, and that's got to be really challenging as well, especially when you do have the number of young guys that you're still developing that you do.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I haven't found it challenging, just because, you know, I've been around, I've played for a few different teams, played for a few different coaches, so I can't speak for the young guys, but our coaches have done such a great job of, I know we just talked about playing consistently, but our coaches have done such a good job of remaining consistent with their messages, relaying information to us, you know, whether it's Clem or Mike McKay or, you know, TK last year, or Darryl Gibson this year, of course, Coach Clark, similar messages, consistent, predictable messages from those guys. And they're not afraid to tell you how it is. And they don't, one thing I like about them is they don't pick favorites. They don't point fingers. It's a collective. It's a team sport. And they understand that. And again, nothing but good things to say about those guys. Coach Clark's done a nice job with Darryl and with Mike being first timers on the NLL bench. You know, who better to learn from than Coach Clark? So it's been a seamless transition for those guys, and their message is being understood loud and clear by the offense and the defense. So not you know, it's more natural and more seamless than you'd think.
You guys are sitting in fourth place. You mentioned you're 7-6. And the difference really, when you look at the standings, just start parsing the numbers. You've got Buffalo at 12-3, Georgia at 11-4. Those two have kind of pulled away a bit. Toronto at 8-5, and you're at 7-6. And the difference very clearly is away games. Because if you go down the list, Buffalo's 6-2 at home, Georgia's 6-1, Toronto's 5-1, you're 6-1. Everybody's winning at home. The difference, Buffalo's 6-1 on the road, Georgia's 5-3. Toronto, middling, 3-4. You guys are 1-5. You've lost in Philadelphia a couple of times. And that's really what's separating you from getting to where you want to be. What have you noticed anything that you think it might be that you can turn around? Do you guys have sort of a plan for changing that? Because you need to, first of all, you need to obviously turn that around a bit if you're going to move up and get one or more home games in the playoffs. And if you don't, you're going to want to be ready to go and win on the road, obviously.
Yeah, I've been trying to wrap my head around that, as I believe probably everyone is when they look at that record. And a couple things that stand out to me, again, we've already touched on it, is consistency. Another thing is mental toughness. I think that with inexperience, we're lacking a little bit of mental toughness. You know, even myself, who's you know, been in this league for 9 years. I think we all, mental toughness is something that's costing us. You know, we show up to the Mohegan Sun and it's familiar and we know what to expect. We know our fan base. We know our home stadium. We know our turf, and it just comes more natural to us. And when we're on the road, we're a little bit out of our element, a little bit unfamiliar. And I don't think we prepare ourselves quite as well individually on the road. I think we're all excited to be together, not having a practice this year. That it's the only time we're together is when we're playing on the weekend on flights, you know, at the hotels and everything. And I think, just from my experience, I think we're a little bit more excited about hanging out than we are about getting ready to play. And it just comes down to execution. We know what we need to do. It's just a matter of being able to flip that switch. And unfortunately, on the road, we haven't been able to flip that switch. We have, I think, 3 more road games coming up, all local games for most of us, which will be nice, not having to hop on an airplane. I think that's going to help us be a little bit more sharp and a little bit more mentally prepared. So, you know, we've been playing well at home. We've had a fantastic crowd all season long. And again, it's just a familiar territory for us. And now we need to learn how to translate that into road games.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned the road games that are close by for you. You've got a couple of home games coming up against Rochester and San Diego, obviously very important, but then you close out with three road games. I don't know if I said road or home there. We've got the two home games, and then you close out with three road games, Toronto, Buffalo, and Rochester, all pretty short drives because most of the guys are in Ontario and relatively close to those markets. So that can make a pretty big difference, right?
Oh, I've had these three circled on the calendar all season long. It's especially when you kind of get used to doing it, like I did in Buffalo for 5 years, where everything's a short drive, and it's a little bit of an adjustment hopping on an airplane every, you know, Friday after work or Saturday early morning. So I know we're excited about these close games. We're all going to have some family and friends come down. And I don't think it could really come at a better time of the year. You know, everyone, this time of the year, the weather's starting to get nice. You don't want to be cooped up in an airplane. You know, it's kind of turning into the dog days of the season, and that's where the mental toughness has to take over. And I think we're in a good spot now that are, you know, instead of having to hop on a long flight for our last three, you know, it's a couple quick drives, and I think everyone's excited about that and looking forward to playing close to home and in front of family and friends. And again, that mental toughness thing, mental toughness and consistency. If we're not prepared for those games, you know, you got to bring your A game every night in this league, no matter where you are. If you're across the country in Vancouver, or if you're just down the road in Toronto or Buffalo, you have to bring your A game. You have to be prepared and be mentally tough.
And you hear it all the time from guys, given that about 60% of the players in the league come from towns in Ontario and are generally based in Ontario. There's a lot of guys who it's a short drive for Toronto, Buffalo, Rochester games. And you hear guys all the time talk about, it's great, we love having, you know, the family and friends available to come and the short trip and everything. But there are also challenges with those nearby games, right? I mean, having the family there and the friends there, there are demands on you that aren't always there on the road, and they're manageable, but you do have to be aware of that they need to be managed.
That's a good point, Steve, and that's something that you hit the nail on the head there. And again, I know I keep going back to consistency, this mental toughness, that, and that's one of those things that comes with mental toughness, game day preparation and focus. And if we can do a better job of focusing more on the playing the game and winning at all costs, and less on the, you know, mom and dad are in the crowd and my girlfriend's in the crowd, this and that, then we're going to be just fine. So as a leadership group, we need to find a way to pass that message down and make that, you know, well known, that it's lacrosse first and extracurricular activities second. But no, you're absolutely right. I know in the past when I'm going to Toronto, I'm excited to see friends I haven't seen in years. I'm excited for my mom and my dad to be in the crowd. But on the other hand, you also want to put on a show for those people. So I find generally it's when I'm at my best and personally, and I find the team, you know, we're excited to play in Buffalo because the crowd's so big. We're excited to play in Toronto because we all grew up grew up watching The Rock. So I think you can, you know, at six, one hand, you know, your mind might be elsewhere, but on the other, you're dialed in because you're excited to, you know, for the big crowd and to play against, you know, your childhood, the team you cheered for. So it's a fine line.
Yeah. The one other thing I wanted to ask you about is the development of Doug Jamison, because he's such a young man. I mean, he's still only 22 years old until this November. He's a very young goaltender, and goalies tend to take a while. And you could see certainly over the last couple of years, definite ups and downs for him. He didn't play a whole lot, but you know, he had some pretty substantial struggles when he did. Started this season, had a couple of shaky games, but then got his first win, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 reels off three in a row. He's got four now, and I think is starting to look like the franchise goaltender that we all saw in junior and that people tended to think he was going to be eventually. And the question was, when would it happen? It looks like it's on the verge of happening. Would you agree? Or is there, I mean, obviously there's still at 22, some things to learn, but he's getting it right.
Doug is, Doug, you know, he's 22. He's just a young kid. He's just a year or two removed from junior. Yeah. And we know how much of a different game that is. The nets are, you know, 4 to 6 inches smaller, whatever it is. And obviously the, you know, the guys aren't shooting the ball as hard. The ball's not moving as quick. So it's a tough adjustment for players and goalies alike. So I think Doug is, he's so young and he's going to continue to improve every game and every practice. He's another guy that is a phenomenal teammate. And I think he's a terrific goalie. I think Doug battles sometimes with confidence, and I've seen him play confident where he's out, on balls of his feet and he's challenging shooters. You know, you can just tell when a goalie's playing confident. And there's times where he might get shelled for a couple in a row and he gets back on his heels and he's not attacking and he's not playing as confident. And I think that comes with inexperience and age. But when Doug is on his A game, I think he's one of the best in the league. A great teammate and a very bright future for Doug. I'm excited that he's, you know, a Black Wolf, and I think he will be for a very long time.
It's interesting because he didn't face a lot of adversity in junior. He didn't get scored on a whole lot. The nets are 6 inches smaller, so, and he covers a lot of net. And with that extra 6 inches, he's had to learn, as we knew there would be the adjustment of, you know, moving more, being prepared, recognizing that there are times you'll think you've got the position. And like you said, the shooters are so good in the NLL. And with the extra 6 inches, you can be in good position. They're going to score on you. And accepting that and being ready to bounce back and face the next shot and not worrying about the last one has to be a huge factor.
Absolutely. I couldn't imagine what those guys go through in there. You know, they take a lot of, you know, if it's a win and a good game, they're the hero. And if, on the contrary, if they lose, you know, their fans are going on Facebook saying, ship this guy out of town. So yeah, it's a bit of a mental battle, I'm sure, with a lot of highs and lows. But, you know, like we talked about, Doug is only a year or two removed from junior. And it's a huge adjustment, and one that I think takes a little bit of time. But I think Doug is starting to recognize just how good he can be. And that comes with confidence.
Mm-hmm. One of the positive signs in that area, I would think, is last year was his first year of senior lacrosse. He'd been with the Six Nations Arrows, moved up to the Chiefs, didn't play a lot early in the season. Later in the year, he started to play more and more, was the go-to guy in the playoffs, and started to play very well. Didn't, frankly, play very well early in the season. It looked like he was almost trying to play an NLL style when he was back in the summer with the big stick and the smaller nets, and it took him a while to get it. But by the end of the year, I thought he'd really caught on last year and was playing very well for Six Nations. And if he follows that trajectory, it certainly bodes well for him in New England as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Brocky, I appreciate you taking the time. It's always great to catch up and to chat, and appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk and your willingness to talk about all the topics. So thanks so much for being with us on Boxlebeat.
Yeah, my pleasure, Stamper. Thanks for having me on. It's always a lot of fun, always nice to catch up. So I'll talk to you soon.
Joining me on Boxlebeat this week, the equipment manager for the Buffalo Bandits, Ted Cordingly. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's a pleasure having you on. I actually got a request from someone saying, hey, why not have an equipment manager? Because we could see some kind of behind the scenes and get an idea of what's involved in getting a team ready to play beyond the coaching side. And I immediately thought of you, Ted. I've known you for a long time. We've seen each other at a lot of rinks, and I know how well respected you are in the game. So I thought, hey, let's get Ted on and delve into the behind the scenes of, well, the Buffalo Bandits, for one. And I mean, how many teams, first of all, have you been equipment manager for or with?
So, I mean, just when my oldest was young, I used to help them out, and that's, so we'll back it up. Even by trade, I'm a licensed mechanic, so I'm pretty mechanically inclined with stuff like that. And I learned basically because my oldest son played lacrosse, so I did stuff like that. And then, you know, I was just the dad that helped out the teams, you know, when kids had, you know, loose or broken sticks or helmets that didn't fit properly or cage, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, when my oldest son was in Tyke and novice and so on and so forth, and I helped in midget when he was in midget with Bob McMahon as the head coach. So then but before that I was with Buffalo. I've helped with the first year the Oakville Rock went to Oakville, Terry Sanderson phoned me and asked me if I would help do him a favor, and I said sure. And you know what, Terry's a good friend of mine, and I like Terry. We had a lot of fun together. And so I helped him for 1 year with Oakville Rock. After that, I took the rest of the summers off because not that I didn't enjoy it. I have my youngest son. So I always, you know, when I did that equipment managing through the summer, I missed a lot of his lacrosse. And so yeah. He's my youngest, my last one. You know, I had more fun watching that. I told Terry Sanderson that. He respected it. And you know, it's funny because I talked to Brandon Miller one time, and this stuck in my brain. And Brandon Miller used to play, you know, summertime and wintertime. And then one year he didn't play in the summer. And I asked him, and he says, you know, Ted, I've done so much lacrosse. He says, when I play in the summer and then I go back to the NLL in the fall, it's not exciting. He says, because it's starting to become more of a job. And you know what? He was right. When I did that summer, I enjoyed it. I had fun. But when the NLL season came around, it wasn't that excitement, you know. I was, you know, you know, it's a job now. Like, and I miss that. So after that, so now I don't really do anything in the summer other than just be a parent and watch my youngest. And when the fall comes, I'm excited, you know.
And so I've done. I mean,
I've done,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say. So you're a parent. You're also an uncle. Your brother Troy Cordingly. I know his kids all play and play and. There's obviously being from Orangeville, there's a ton of lacrosse around, a lot of relations and friendships. So it's not like you're not seeing your share of lacrosse in the summer.
Yes. And you know what? And you know what? I'm like you, Stephen, is even if I'm not doing my job, I still like going out and watching lacrosse games. Like even if I don't even know anybody, you know, junior A games are good, fun to watch. Junior B's, Orangeville Junior B's, Orangeville Junior A's, they were always good, exciting teams to watch.
Yeah.
I follow, and I'm not biased with any senior A team. I like watching. I watched Peterborough in the finals last year because, you know what, I've got pretty much everybody on my team on Buffalo that's from pretty much everywhere. You know, I've got Ethan O'Connor that grew up in Milton. So I like, you know, and I got Sean Evans of Peterborough. You know, I've got pretty much, you know, everybody. I got a couple of BC guys. So, you know, everybody, so I talk to them and, you know, I don't go with a favorite team. I do like watching the younger teams. Like, you know, everybody's getting sick of the Six Nations and Peterborough's winning it all the time. And yeah, you know, I like to watch the younger guys. Like I can see Oakville's coming up. They're getting faster and younger every year. Cause I remember the first year I did them and we didn't beat anybody. We were new and we were young. And now I'm seeing them, and they're competitive. And now they're they're right there. You know, so it's good to see teams like that grow, and I'll watch anything, you know, anything that's lacrosse.
And I mean, you mentioned the Peterborough guys that you were watching last year. There's seven Lakers on the Bandits this year. The coaches of the Bandits, John Tavares and Rich Kilgore, are coaches with the Six Nations Chiefs, and there are players from there on the team. You mentioned, you know, there's guys from all over, like you said. It really is a mingling. And you did touch on the some of the things you do as an equipment guy. I mean, dealing with helmets, dealing with sticks. Can you just give us a rundown of all the things quickly that your job entails? I know you could. There's a lot that you do around the rink.
You know what? I pretty much do everything. I'm really lucky that I have Nick and Casey and Dan. They've been helping me for years with equipment. They're my assistants. So when I'm at home, I have Nick and Casey will usually do. So when you're at home, it's a bigger job at home than it is on the road. Because not only are you in charge of your own room, but you're also in charge of the visiting room. So the visiting teams, because for price and cost, they don't fly in with lacrosse balls. So you supply them lacrosse balls, you supply them towels, you supply them, you know, body wash, shampoo, all that kind of stuff. You know, Gatorade, water, everything that they need for a game. So you when you set up in the morning, you set up two rooms. You set up a visiting room and you set up your home room. So I'm lucky that I have those young guys to help me, because they take a major, huge load off me, because that gives me a chance to do broken elbow pads or sewing elbow pads, sewing gloves, repairing helmets. You know, guys like just last Saturday, Bryce Sweeting wanted his face mask changed. He didn't like the Under Armour. He wanted to try the Warrior face mask. So I changed that. And that's not just as easy as just changing it, because they don't just bolt straight on. I have to drill the helmet and put in little inserts so they can attach. And then stuff like that. Innovative. So, you know, I mean, we're not like the Buffalo Sabres. When we need something, we can just go out and buy it. I make a lot of stuff. So I just think about what we need and how what things would work. So all those, when you see the pictures on my Instagram of me hanging up the jerseys, it took me a little bit, but I didn't want to put a hanger on, because then the jersey hangs sideways, because we have a little bar across the bottom of our shelf. So okay. I thought of a way to make hangers to hang up the jersey flat-wise. So all those hangers, I got the steel rod, cut them, banded it all, and welded it all together and painted them. So stuff like that. I make pretty much a lot of that stuff.
What is your Instagram so folks can go check it out?
It's NLL Bandits Equip, EQUIP, and you'll see all the pictures. And pretty much all those pictures that are on there are followers will say, hey, Ted, when those pads that you make for Dane, because Dane, offensive guys get a lot of slashes on forearms, so I'm looking at making plastic guards. You can see guards that I make for their forearms, just to keep them from feeling the slashes and stuff. Little things like I'm always making. I made Zach Higgins, he's a goalie, and their freehand, Zach's puts little pads on his fingers and tapes them to his fingers, because his poor left hand is so beat up from being a goalie for so many years. So when I made up this kind of a blocker to not only the palm of his hand, but it continues down that's sewn to the blocker to protect his fingers, only for practice and shoot around. Like you can't modify any gloves for an NLL game,
right?
But at least in a practice, you know, in a game like last week, you'll see a game, you know, it's anywhere between 50 and 60 shots a goalie can see. But in a practice, they're not contested shots either. They're just guys that just walk up and just drill them at you when they're shooting on you. And that goalie could see over 100 shots in a practice, right?
Easily,
so,
easily.
Stuff like that, you know, and things like that. And guys, you know, I'm always watching. and trying to just make the game a little better. Guys get hurt all the time and things like that. And you know, it just things come into my mind. Like, I was in Vegas last year, and me and my wife, and she likes to go to these. She likes her favorite shows, this Ross, Dress for Less. She goes into these clothes shoppings, and she'd be in there for hours. So I'll just mutter around in the store, and I found kids' soccer shin guards made by Under Armour. And I was looking at them, and they're moldable, and you can cut them to whatever size. So I thought, you know what? I think these would be great for forearm pads. And I showed them to one of my one of our offensive guys, Dane Smith. He thought they were the greatest thing he's ever seen. So now pretty much all of my offensive guys are wearing them. You know, I bought one pair, and everybody thought they were great. Now I had to buy six more pair for all my offensive guys. And it saves the forearms from getting slapped.
So
you know,
did you have to go back to Vegas to get the rest?
No. I just happened to find them in Vegas on the shelf for a deal, and I thought, you know what, they were $1.99. I thought, you know, I mean, I've been paying $10 for them on eBay, but I thought, you know, it's a good deal. But, you know, nobody likes them, then so be it. It's only $1.99, but everybody loved them. So, you know, I mean, stuff like that. I'm always thinking about things like that. So I fix helmets, gloves, sticks comes loose, things like that. There's always something to do. John Gertler, our play-by-play guy, he came into me in my room one time before he went on the air, and his button fell off his suit jacket. Pulled on his button. So I pretty much do her all.
Nice. What are some, I mean, you mentioned personalizing things like for Dane, and then, well, obviously everyone followed suit with the pads. And obviously you're always having to be aware of making sure, like you said, with Zach Higgins, you know, and the goal is put with the extra padding, being compliant with the rules, knowing what you can do in practice, what you can do in games and everything. I'm curious what some of the things you've had to do for people that, you know, to being creative. An example that comes to mind for me is like Deoga Nanticoke is playing in the NCAA right now, and he has a very large head. So he has to have an extra large helmet that I think for field, he actually wore a box helmet for a while, and then they have to like specially make one from two helmets or something. But there are little things like that until you come across it, you just don't know. Can you think about one or two things that just you ran up against something that you have to come up with a solution for?
The Angus Goodleaf, when he was playing on our team, you have a measurement at the bottom of your goalie pad that's got to be 5.5 inches. And I had to phone Brian Lemon and figure out what we're going to do because his calf was 5.5 inches. Hmm. So that was not even, you know, I mean, I can't shave off half his leg, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So we had to narrow down the padding and stuff just to get it to go around his leg to meet requirements. But, and he got like his leg was like he's a big guy, right? You know. And another thing came to mind is when Dave DeRusio was on our team, he had such a big head. I had to cascade at one time back then, and I was lucky because Cascade stopped doing this. And I really don't know what I would do now. But Cascade had to make two helmets into one for Dave's head because
that's what they did for Deoga Nanticoke. Same thing. They like cut it not quite down the middle, right? Put the two halves together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what they had to do for Dave DeRusio. So things like that. I mean, if I can't come up with a solution, and sometimes when it's out of the rules, I usually phone or email Brian Lemon and we discuss it and talk about what can we do, and you know. Because you got to make the play. It's got to be safe, and you know, I mean, you can't. I mean, what can you do? Like, I mean, like the guy, you know, if the guy's just a big guy. Like, there's not much you can do. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm 6'9". You know me, and I find like if I was playing contact lacrosse these days, it's tough finding gear. I mean, I haven't played since I've been my full height. So it used to be not as bad, but I mean, kidney pads aren't long enough for me.
Yeah. And no, you're right. And that, and that's what I run into with a lot of things like arm guards, arm pads, like elbow pads, arm guards. Some of them are good for certain guys, but you get a big guy with big arms, he can barely get them on, you know, and then when he gets them on, you know, the forearm's exposed, and you got sometimes 6 inches of exposure between the glove and the bottom of the arm guard, and that's the longest arm guard they make. So that's why I'm saying, like, things like them soccer shin guards come in handy, you know, and, mm-hmm. and things like that, little innovative things that help protect the guys, you know.
Absolutely.
Floating plastics for in between the elbows, between, you know, when you open your elbow, it's the arm guard's covered, but when your elbow is open, there's right across the inside of your elbow or your bend of your arm is unexposed, and I made plastic guards for there too. So there's lots of things. I mean, I think the first thing I ever made was I had to make an extra pad for John Tavares' shoulder. He had a very sensitive shoulder, and I think his shoulder was sensitive because when he would drive the net, his left shoulder would go in first and to protect the stick. And I think from years and years and years and years and years of cross checks and slashes on his shoulder, just mm-hmm. like Zach Higgins' fingers just got oversensitive. And I made a pad that would float on his back. And you know, John Tavares got new shoulder pads every single year, but he still used those same one shoulder pads, I bet, for about 7 or 8 years, the ones that I made him.
Wow. Speaking with Ted Cordingly, the equipment manager of the Buffalo Bandits here on BoxLabeat. And if you want to go and check out some of the photos, NLL Bandits Equip is the Instagram handle. So I'm curious, Ted, when you have to go to the rink for a game, say it's a 7 o'clock game, fairly normal start time, right? When would you arrive at the rink?
I usually talk to my assistants. Just depends. If 90% of the time, the other team has a shoot around before us, and it's usually at, say, 9:30. So mm-hmm. we'll usually show up around 7:30. Some guys, you know, Nick might some show up 7 or whatever. He'll start to do the visiting room. We'll start to pull out the jerseys and stuff like that, hang them on. We have one big rack by the equipment room, pull everything out of our equipment room. Our equipment room is small, so we have to pull. We store everything in our equipment room. We pull it all out so we can work out of it. We start to set our room up and the visiting room up at the same time. Mostly the visiting room gets a little bit, because they're going to come in and they're going to be on the floor for a shoot around. It's anywhere between 9 and 9:30. Depends on what their coaches, you know, want. Our guys will come in around 8:30 because they eat breakfast, and then our shoot around will be like they'll have video, and then our shoot around will be 10:30 to 11:30, or sometimes 10 to 11. So we'll be doing that shoot around. So we'll do water bottles. Mostly Nick and Casey will do water bottles for the visiting team, put out their lacrosse balls, and then I'll also make coffee. We go through a lot of coffee. I'll make coffee for the visiting team. And I think we could probably go through probably 20 cups of coffee in a day per team. A lot of coffee. Yeah. We go through, if you're probably wondering, we go through probably 100, we'll go through 120 lacrosse balls in a day, in a game, give or take. So they'll get 30, 35 balls given to the visiting team, the shoot around. We'll get 30, 35. 25 goes to the referees in the penalty box. And then also shoot around and warm ups. So you go through 120 balls in a game.
The shoot around balls, you'd be using, reusing, right? I mean, those would go stay in the bag. Until
yeah, you know what? Oh, but you know what? It's funny they say you say that because you think, okay, so shoot around balls, you'll go back, but you know what, you'll put 35 out there, Steven, and at the end of the shoot around you'll have 8.
Yeah.
And then you'll go in, I'll me and myself and, you know, Nick and Dan and Casey will walk around the crowd for the in the stands when nobody's there, And, you know, you might find 10, you know, and for, I don't know where they go, you know. Like maybe when they summertime comes and they clean out the arena and they find another 100 balls underneath seats and stuff like that, or they drop down between the boards and the stand, you know, where the feet go right down underneath, you know, I don't know where they go. And, you know, but anyway, so through the day, lunchtime's at around noon, 12:30, we'll all stay at the rink, and just putter away if I have anything to fix, gloves, whatever I got to do. And then we start to put our room together around 1-ish, 2-ish, and put the jerseys up. All the gear's hung and drying while the guys go back to the hotels and nap. Mm-hmm. So we just butter. I'm there all day. And then when the game's on, game's over at 9:30-ish, we clean up, wait for the visiting team to leave, clean up their room, put all the towels away. They go into a bag, goes to the laundry or to the cleaners, stuff like that. And then by the time we're all done, it's 11:30. So I'm there from 7:30. We're all there. Me, Nick, Casey, Dan, 7:30 in the morning till 11:30 at night.
It's a long day. I bet you sleep well.
It is. It's a long day. And then I drive home and I get home at 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning. But that's the way it's always been. So,
are you living in Orangeville, or where are you living these days?
I'm actually just before Orangeville. I'm in Caledon.
Okay.
So it's not a bad drive. It's a 2-hour door-to-door. So it's a nice drive.
Yeah, you mentioned the number of balls you'll go through in a practice and a game and things. My girlfriend was actually wondering. I was like, hey, I'm going to be talking to Ted on the show. Do you have any questions? She's like, how many sticks does a team go through in a game or in a season? Obviously, you guys are going to go through more, but how many shafts?
So you know what? Somebody just asked me this the other day, and it's funny because when I started about 13 years ago, and Reebok was the sponsor, and you know, it's funny when I used to keep spare lacrosse heads on the bench with me and spare shafts, you know, you would go through one or two heads in a game, And it's funny now because you'd be very rare. Do you break heads now? Heads are like, you know, I mean, the game's not got softer. I mean, if it's anything, it's gotten a lot physical and rougher and it's faster. But I'm amazed at the technology and the lacrosse heads, how they withstand. I mean, they still do crack and they still do break, but not like they used to, you know? Same as shafts. Like all the new technology that companies are putting into the shafts are a lot tougher than they used to be, like, you know, and they're a lot lighter. You know, I'm amazed, like Sean Evans uses a light Epic Integra, which weighs 135 grams, and it weighs like next to nothing, and you know, he sets picks, and I'm amazed at how strong shafts are now. Like, they used to break when they were a fight. When a guy came to me, when a company came to me and said, well, you got a couple of players, we try out some carbon shafts, and carbon shafts didn't work. Like, they just snapped.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because you look at hockey sticks these days, and that's one of the big things, is the hockey sticks have gotten so expensive and so technologically advanced, but they just shatter all the time. I mean, it drives guys nuts. I know you have some old school hockey guys seeing the sticks break on passes or receiving passes. Like, come on. So it's interesting that the cross shafts are getting so much stronger.
But you know what, though, too? I'm also, I know I get transition guys that'll say, hey, Ted, I want a nice light shaft. And I'll say, no, you're not getting a light shaft because you're transitioned. You're going to be playing defense. I'm not going to waste sticks. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I'll help a guy get comfortable with a stick, but most D guys are going to use a good, solid defensive shaft. Like, I mean, I couldn't give a guy Sean Evans' stick to Bryce Sweeting. You know what I mean?
No, it wouldn't last a game.
Break it one. Yes. So, you know, I mean, every guy's got his own different personal stick, and I try to help. But if a guy's going through a lot of sticks, then I got to say, you know, we got to upgrade your stick to a little bit stiffer stick. I mean, and guys are pretty good. Like, I mean, guys are always trying. different things. So your original question is I don't, we get, I'd say we would go through maybe if 100 shafts in a season.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, I think back in the old days, I think we used to go through more than 140. I think we did one year, 142 shafts in one season, you know?
That's a big difference.
But, it is a big difference. And like, I mean, because let's face it, you know as well as I do, kids are a lot bigger. They're like, you know, I remember 13 years ago when I had Dalby Pellis and Roger Weiss and Clay Hill and all them guys. And I mean, I'm not a big guy, but I could only have to look up 2 or 3 inches. But now, when you got Steve Priolo was one of the, like, I mean, he was a giant to me. And now it seems like everybody that we draft is Steve Priolo's height, you know? So,
there's some big kids playing the game.
Yes, and they're big and they're strong and they're athletic now, you know? Like, they're, so, like, the game's, that's what I'm saying, like, technology has changed a lot in just the 13 years I've been around. Helmets are way better. Gloves are a lot better. Like, technology is just like whoever's doing the lacrosse equipment is paying attention.
Ted, you mentioned that when you go on the road, you get a little bit of a break in terms of setting up the change rooms, the dressing room and things. But traveling with all the equipment, the pads, everyone's gear, the uniforms, all your equipment that you need to maintain everything, that's got to be quite a challenge, especially when you're flying. I mean, driving is one thing, flying, man, that's a lot of stuff to haul around.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only, when I go on the road, if we're in Toronto or Rochester, my assistants will drive there. If we're like, you know, Vancouver, Saskatchewan, out with a flight, Colorado, usually, I get help with the players. The players are actually really good. Usually it's called a rookie rule. So if I have extra stuff, the rookies will help carry one of the bags. Or a lot of times either Dan goes on the road with us or Scott Loeffler goes on the road and they help with the, they'll drag the jersey bag. So like even jersey bag, you know, jerseys and shorts. So it's actually, you know, it's not as bad as it really seems. I always try to get my equipment below because they charge extra if it's above 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll usually bring spare defensive shafts, spare offensive shafts. I try to bring everything that I need, the sewing kits, just because I've just been done it and the common things that break and spare helmet parts and stuff like that. But I try to bring bare minimum. And what's really good about the NLL is all of us equipment managers are all pretty close. So, if I'm in Vancouver or if I'm in Calgary or Saskatchewan, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm short a part, you know, I'm missing a helmet loop or something. I can just ask their guys, and, you know, I mean, it's the same as when they come to us. I mean, we do whatever we can to help out each other. So that's what's really cool about the NLL is all equipment guys all get along and we all help each other, you know, because we're all doing the same job, right? So
that's what's
really good about this league. And, you know, we talk, we email through the summer and see if anybody, you know, anything new or anything like that, if they've heard about anything equipment or what are you guys doing this year? Like just stuff like that, like, you know, up-to-date stuff. So we all keep track and keep, you know, the new.
So it's like the goalie union, but it's the equipment guy union.
What part of me?
I said it's like the goalie union, but it's the equipment guy union.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when the new Philly team came in, Paul Day, because I got to know Paul Day when I was equipment manager with Team Canada.
Okay.
And he phoned me and asked me because he asked me if I could help him with the sizing of the goalies, what to order. And I said, do you have equipment guy? And he said, yeah. And he says, but he's very new at it. He actually grew up helping with the Flyers. So I said, well, tell him to phone me and I'll help him through an order. So I helped Anthony from Philly I got to know him and become good friends. And, you know, we talked all summer. And I kept telling him, you know, it's not a big deal. Whatever question you have, no matter what, if you think it's stupid or not, phone me and we'll go through it. And so Anthony and I have become good, very good friends. And I never knew the guy before the start of last season, you know. So things like that. That's what's good about it. We're all pretty good friends in the NLL with the equipment guys. And, you know, we all like, you know, I mean, go out for a couple of beers after the game and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. You know what I mean?
I do. And you know what, that story doesn't surprise me, having known you for a while. You've always been one of the friendliest guys in any rink that I go to. And, you know, always have a nice, always have something funny to say, or, you know, just a cheery greeting. So it's, I can see how you'd be helpful with everybody else. And it's nice to know it kind of goes around the whole league.
Yes, it does. It's, we're very fortunate with all the equipment guys in the whole league. We all respect each other. Back in the old days, the biggest thing I thought, what bothered me the most is when a visiting team came to our rink, and when they would leave, you'd go into the dressing room and it was just a mess.
Right.
You know? So I was one of the guys that started that. Let's leave this room the way we would like it to be when they showed up. So, you know, that's been taking so many years, but now you can go into any NLL dressing room after they're done, and it's pretty spick and span. And that's
nice.
Thanks to the equipment manager from that team, because, like, all whoever our captain is on our Buffalo team, I tell them, Steve, I want this room. You know, Steve Priel is our captain. Now,
yeah.
Steve, I want this room clean before we go. And it's usually the rookies that got to do it. But you know what? Everybody now on our team chips in, and we leave the room the way I'd like to see it, called up clean. And pretty much now every team in the NLL does the same thing. And it's nice. You know, you feel it feels good. You walk in the room.
Mutual respect.
Expand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I have one last thing I wanted to ask you about, and I'm just curious because obviously your job doesn't really change from season to season depending on how the team's doing, but does it feel any different? It must be a bit more fun for everyone, and for you included, after missing the playoffs for a couple of seasons, be sitting in first place, having such a good season, everything's going so well. It's got to be a different mood for you as well as the team.
Steven, it is so huge. 2 years, you know, and you try to be so positive, and it really is hard. And then, you know, everything's just not going, you know, I mean, we've had great teams just, you know, and you've seen it, you've been around the cross where the bounces just don't go your way.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost a lot of one goal games in those years. And it's tough, and you feel bad for everybody, and everybody's stressed because all the offensive guys want to score. All the defensive guys want to, you know, all the goalies are stressed because they want to help. So it's hard. But when you're on a team like this year, everybody is so relaxed. Everybody's having, this is one of the happiest, it's hard to say because it's the most tight knitted group I've seen in a long time this year, where they all have fun together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not pockets of players hanging together. This whole thing is one massive family, and they all have fun. And when a new guy comes on the team, they bring him in like he's already been on the team, you know, for years. And it's really, it's a lot of fun because no matter what, and you know, like, you know, when you're winning and you're loose and little pranks, you can have fun and jokes and stuff like that. When you're not winning, those, you know, people get mad when you start doing little pranks and jokes and stuff like that. But when you're, and it's fun, and it's been, these guys deserve it. They've worked very, very hard. And, you know, it's fun. It's a great atmosphere. It's truly the best because, you know, when guys start showing up early on game days and showing up early on practices, because they want to be there. You know what I mean? It's fun. You know, you see it when we're playing as good as we're playing, and you know, like you don't ever, you know, you don't want to ever overemphasize, because you know how fast things can turn around in this league, right? Because every team's just as good. You know what I mean? Every team's just as good as any other team. You know, nothing's a guarantee. So they just keep working hard, and they've been working hard. But like you're right. It's fun to be around when everybody's, you know, everybody's in a good mood and everything's going good. But
brilliant, Ted. I know you've got practice tonight. You've got a lot going on. Really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join me on Voxel Beat. It was a lot of fun, and I think some people are going to learn some things from this episode.
Well, that's good. Thanks for having me on, Stephen. I really appreciate it. If I don't see you soon, I hope to see you some rink this summer.
I feel like it'll happen soon. We usually run into each other pretty regularly.
You got to be due for coming down to Buffalo sooner or later. I haven't seen you all season yet.
Yeah, I haven't been down there yet this year. I'll have to make my way down. I love going to games there.
Good. I'll tell Evans that he can buy you dinner or something.
That could happen. We'll see. You never know. All right. Thanks so much for coming on.
See you later. Bye.
All right, lacrosse friends, that'll just about wrap things up for this episode of Voxel Beat on NLL Radio and iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and editor at ilindoor.com, where you can go for all the best of box lacrosse coverage on the internet. Thanks so much to David Brock and to Ted Cordingly for their interesting insights. And thank you, lacrosse friends, for being with me here on Voxel Beat. We'll see you next time.